Well, Howard, as we get into this big question of you being an atheist several years ago, and I want to know how come you're mentioning God, somebody wanted to know if you were the Antichrist.
None of my favorite. That's a good one.
I don't think you are.
That's an elevation in, I'm not sure whether that's an elevation in rank or I've just been given a de-promotion.
I don't know. All right. You said you were an atheist a couple
right.
years ago, and you and I kind of did a little toe-to-toe about that.
Right.
And now you talk about God in some of your phrases, some of your structured thought. How
well,
come?
Okay, let me try to explain it. I'm still an atheist.
And are you aware you're doing that?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Very aware.
All right.
Very aware. But I'm still an atheist. But there's something called isomorphic symbol sets. And when I'm trying to describe to people the relationship between the arts and the sciences, I say there are three isomorphic symbol sets: religion, the arts and poetry, and science. In other words, all of these are different languages or different ways of trying to get at the same thing. And I am absolutely staggered with awe by the fact that if the evolutionary view of life is correct, that we live in a universe that could go from nothing to a big bang in an instant, so much less than an instant that we can't even measure it. I am absolutely awed by the fact that we can go from an expanding manifold of space-time that shoots out at a speed way beyond our imagining to the precipitation of particles, and particles that are so identical to each other that there are 10 with 81 zeros after them. A figure much bigger than the zillions of identical protons precipitating out of this expanding sheet of nothing but space and time all at once. I'm astounded that those things can coagulate in galaxies 300,000 to a million years later. I am astounded that those galaxies can then begin to compress their matter and that matter can catch fire and give off something new called light. Let there be light. Indeed, there was a moment of let there be light in this universe, one way or the other. And I'm astounded by life. I am astounded by the fact that on this lonely little planet, this piece of rock, 4 billion years ago, that was naked 4 billion years ago, naked and being smacked by planetesimals as if it were the face of a boxer, and totally deformed by these huge meteorites, massive meteorites, one of them, in fact, a planet, the planet that tore off the moon. I'm astonished that these new molecular teams could get together and actually be clever enough to not only survive in their environment, but then to reproduce themselves. And they didn't do it alone. They did it in teamwork with a cellular wall. There is no such thing as DNA just reproducing on its own. It does it inside of a cell. So from the very beginning of life, there were apparently cells working in collaboration with DNA inside of them. That is an astonishment. How dare molecules attempt such a thing? And I'm astonished by the fact that for 3.5 billion years, this stuff that I call biomass, and a lot of people do, but this stuff that's DNA and cell-oriented, this stuff we call life, has been on this rabidly imperialistic process of taking over as many of the inorganic molecules, as many of the inanimate molecules, as possible, and turning them into yet more life.
Well, welcome to the club, Howard.
So it's amazing, George, and a universe that can produce that many surprises in 13.7 billion years, think what it's going to produce over the next 13.7 billion
years. Well, did you think this way 2.5 years ago when we first talked?
Oh, yes, I always have. George,
then you were holding back.
I was holding back because way back at the very beginning of my scientific life, you know, I was 10 when I got into science. I was 13 by the time I realized I was an atheist. And you know that the two principles in science that had really grabbed my soul were the truth at any price, including the price of your life, and look at things right under your nose as if you've never seen them before, and then ask all of the questions that come from the wonder and awe that ensues when you see them as if you've never saw them before, as if you've seen them anew. Well, the thing that I realized was right under my nose was God. The thing that I realized was right under my nose was the perpetual belief in God, the fact that everybody I knew believed in God. Everybody I knew believed in one form or another of heaven and hell. Every society or tribe that I had ever studied, and remember, at 13, I didn't have a social life, so what else could I do but study?
That's true. Boy wonder.
Books.
Yeah.
So every tribe that I knew of had the same beliefs. And so it seemed to me the most obvious thing was not to look under my nose for something that everybody else was overlooking,
mm-hmm.
but to look behind my nose. And there I would find the belief in religion. And why did I go out on an expedition to find the gods inside of us? Because the most one of the most impressive things about the belief in God and the belief in religion was the passion that went into it. And the passion was often overwhelming. I mean, phrases like the passion of Christ are not accidental phrases. They refer to a kind of being in touch with, you know, I have no scientific word for this. They mean being in touch with a kind of divinity. And as a scientist, it's my responsibility to come up with a different way of looking at it and come to say what divinity means. But there is divinity inside of you. There's divinity inside of me. There's divinity inside of a stone simply for being, when once upon a time there was no being whatsoever. There's divinity in some strange way inside of almost everything, but mostly it's inside of us human beings.
If you had a chance to get into a time machine and go back to a certain period of this planet, where would you go?
Oh, my God. First of all, I'd never survive the health problems of the pre-antibiotic age, so that limits me to 1948. But, you know, I would really suspect that I would go back to the time of Jesus.
You would?
It is...
To witness? To ask?
Yes, I would want to hear what he was saying. I would want to be there at the Sermon on the Mount. I would want to see what was interpreted as the loaves and fishes. I would want to be able to talk to St. Paul, who was an astonishing person. I mean, if nothing else, he was one of the greatest public relations artists in the history of the planet. He took a religion, reshaped it, and then found a way to take it right across the boundaries of every kind of culture that existed within the Roman Empire. I would want to know these people. And you know something? I think that if I were to sit down with, and this may sound sacrilegious, but if I were to sit down and talk to Jesus, I would be utterly fascinated by him.
I'm sure you would. Now, what would you say to Judas?
Oh, my God. This is just a personal, ethical, moral matter. And as a personal, ethical, moral being, I do not believe in betraying somebody that you should be loyal to by any stretch of the imagination.